we cannot control things that we cannot control. So let's focus on everything we can control and make it better. And, you know, project the same message in the most difficult times consistently every day and try to get the best out of everyone.
Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality. This episode is brought to you by our podcast partners at Real-Time Reservation. Their inventory management system is best in class for hotels and resorts to manage their non-room inventory. The web-based application allows for creative upselling of overnight and daytime visitors with add-ons and pre-planned packages. Hotel guests and non-guests can reserve cabanas, pool chairs, activities, amenities, excursions, events, day passes, and much more. The real-time reservation platform offers a fully integrated pre-arrival portal where guests are verified through the property management system. Guests can prepay for cabanas and activities through credit card integrations, which are then processed through point of sale. All of our listeners that might be interested in using real-time reservation are welcome to explore the demo at realtimereservation.com. Once again, that's realtimereservation.com. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Roddy Gaurav, the general manager at Soho Beach House, here with us. Roddy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Steve. It's really an honor.
Well, I've been waiting to get you on. I'm excited to learn about your current position, but we always start with the same question. What was your very first job in hospitality?
So, like many people who move into the U.S., I moved to the U.S. following my family, and they were settled in a small town in North Carolina, Sunset Beach, which is very near Myrtle Beach. Both kind of resort towns with a lot of golf courses, a lot of hotels. And as I was going to school, trying to learn English and speak fluently, everything was new to me. I was in a new country, a new culture.
Where were you living before?
So I moved from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria.
Eastern Europe. Perfect. Small country near Greece and Turkey. But yeah, everything was new. But I had to start work. And as you can imagine, not knowing anybody, not being from there, I was advised that maybe should go to an agency, employment agency, and see what kind of work comes up. And, you know, I was asked, what do you prefer to work? Obviously, I picked hotels because there were plenty of them and golf courses. I was sent to this golf resort, had over probably 1,000 rooms, had 3 golf courses near the beach. And I worked in banquets. So you could say my first position was like a banquet houseman. I was moving tables, moving chairs, setting up the rooms before the dinners. And this was my basically daily activity. I had a great manager, which I've connected with, and eventually helped me become an employee of that resort. So basically, that's how it all started.
That's amazing. What was the name of that resort?
It's called Sea Trail Golf Resort and Convention Center. Had a lot of convention space for large events. But it also had a restaurant. It had a pool bar. It had beverage and food service around the golf course. Mm-hmm. So this is how I began learning.
Yeah, it's a good position to be in a hotel. Yeah. That was actually my second job, was in Banquet Houseman. And it was maybe one of the hardest. Definitely harder than working at the pool and beach where I started. Like moving those tables and stacks of chairs and getting everything set up is always hard. And when you were in Bulgaria, was this something that you wanted to do, like work in hotels? Or did you have different dreams before you hit this first time in North Carolina?
Honestly, it was new to me. I never dreamt of working in hospitality. But I had to kind of simplify it in my head, because hospitality can be very complicated. But it can also be very simple. So I found myself in a place and I started learning the basics.
Oh, that's a good place to do. And you were there for a while. You were there for 4 years. So did you grow within that hotel, or were you always in that banquet
position? Yes. So I started in banquets, as I said. I was first a from a temp agency, right? Which are very popular now because
everyone needs staff.
Yes. And as I said, I work hard, build a connection, and eventually got hired in banquets and moved on from being a houseman to a banquet server. Learn, you know, the menus, the beverages we serve. But, you know, what was motivating me in the back of my head was I had an extreme, like, hunger to know more. So I continuously read books on service, what is, you know, proper service, what is casual service, what type of venues there are, upscale, casual, cafes. So I just continued learning, and they soon onboarded an F&B director who kind of gave me a direction. And, you know, as your podcast is called, The Hospitality Mentors, literally everything I've learned today is because of, I found myself across some, working with some great mentors. So it started early there.
You know? So who is this person? Because that's very unique, right? A director of food and beverage coming in. You're in banquet server, so he must have seen something going on. What was that? How did that happen?
He moved in from Texas. He used to work in big resorts there. And, you know, I connected with him, and he's like, look, if you want to move up, if you want to work in a restaurant, if you want to be a server in a restaurant, you need to learn the steps of service. You need to learn the food. You need to learn the beverages we offer, the cocktails. You need to learn the POS. So as he was telling me this, I began learning everything step by step. I learned the menu. I learned the cocktails, the wines. I learned the steps of service. I learned how to use the POS. And one day I came to him. I said, look, I'm ready to be a server. Like, I don't want to work in banquets anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's a possibility, I'd like to move into the restaurant. So that's how it began. And from the restaurant, I was serving for a while. And then, again, I wanted to continue learning. And I'm like, how do I become a bartender? So, yeah, he gave me guidelines. Like, first, you start as a barback. You need to, you know, you need to learn from the bartenders, their trade. So I did that. I started learning spirits, tequilas, vodkas, whiskeys, everything available at the bar. And same thing happened. One day I was like, look, you can test me. I'm ready
to go.
And I moved to be a bartender. At the same time, I was still pretty young, so I didn't know exactly if I wanted to stick with hospitality. And I took some courses in real estate. I've told him, like, look, I will love to learn more about that industry. I took my classes. I got my real estate license. And then he came to me and he's like, you're really good at this. It comes natural. I would like to offer you a higher position and see where it goes. And at that moment, I had to make a decision and say, okay, I'm going to give myself 100% to being in hospitality. So I got a position as a F&B manager in the same resort. I was learning about purchasing beverage, inventories, beverage costs. And I was just exposed to all of those things as a whole, which I really enjoyed. I do like numbers. So this was very interesting to me.
Yeah. So you get to see that, because I want to go to that part, and not to cut you off there, is to make a jump, especially working in the place that you're at, right? The Sea Trail Golf Resort. You've kind of gone all the way through all the different positions. You're learning everything in food and beverage. And then you jump to becoming a manager for the first time. Yes. Very different world than, hey, I punch out of my shift and I head home, right? Yes. What was that like for you? Was it a hard transition, or did you have good leadership and they taught you everything you needed to know?
It was, again, I still have this even today, like, motivation to continue learning, because I don't think our industry is a book that you can read. And once you're done reading, that's it. You know it all. I believe I compare it to wine. Like, wine is a never-ending lesson, and so is hospitality. So it was challenging, yes, but it was also very, very rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, because I think for a lot of first-time managers, they think, oh, I could do what that manager does. He doesn't know how to make the schedule, or he messes up my payroll all the time. And then they get into that seat, and they're like, oh, man, this is actually a lot more than I thought
it
was. So it's good to see that you had that energy to kind of push through. And you do continue to push through, right? So you're in North Carolina, and then you make a pretty big change in your life, and you come down to our current neighborhood here in South Beach, in Miami Beach. How does that happen?
So, interesting story. I came with friends to vacation, and we stayed at the amazing Fontainebleau.
The classic, yep.
An eye-opening experience. Coming from, you know, a small country in Europe, it was a dream, like, even to be here, to see it, and we end up in the Fountain Blue. We had a great week of vacation, and I was just, like, amazed by the city, and I love it today even more so. But the weather, the lifestyle, the beach, it was just amazing. So I was like, I need to save money and move down here. And I tried to make some savings, and I did, and literally packed my car with some of my clothes. And I drive down to Miami. I had no job. I had no friends here. Maybe I had a friend, one, and not really a close friend, but he did help me. So, but I make the move. I try to find a place and a job at the same time. Well, yes. Yes. Well, not running out of money, you know, like it's hard to move here without any connections and start over. It was very, very challenging, but I didn't want to give it up. I knew once I find a position and I get situated, I will make connections and somehow find my way.
That's amazing. And
actually, yeah, this is what actually happened, but yeah, very, very challenging times.
So was your family supportive? Were they still in North Carolina? Are they like, where are you going, Roddy? You don't know anybody. What's going on? Or were they like, go for it. Chase your dreams. How was it?
They were supportive because they knew what I wanted wasn't there. And, you know, they wanted to make sure that I'm happy with whatever I'm doing. So, yeah, I ended up moving to Miami.
You moved to Miami 2011, November. And where do you land?
So I kept applying, kept searching for jobs. I knew I had some experience and some knowledge in F&B, and I found a job at the Ganzabord Hotel. There's a small coffee shop that wasn't even part of the hotel. Maybe it was at the hotel, but not part of it. Mm-hmm. And it gave me a chance to make a living and remain in Miami. And in that cafe, I met various people, executives from the hotel coming in to get coffee every day. All kinds of various people in hospitality. There was a gym back then in the Ganzevoort, which was very popular.
Yeah, what was that called? So, I forget what it was. Now it's Anatomy for the One Hotel. It's where the One Hotel was, but what was it called? I remember it was like very like popular. I forgot the name too. I can't
remember. I know. I don't remember. But yeah, it was like the hot spot.
Yeah.
Or yeah, gym. It was the hot spot of gyms. And I met some good people there who helped me eventually find a position with the Shore Club, Morgan's Hotel Group back then. And I was at that point, that was the best time of my life. I was like, I'm finally at a hotel where I feel, you know, confident and comfortable. And I started there as an F&B manager. At that time, the Shore Club was a huge lifestyle place, a lot of parties,
yep,
especially by the pool. We had the Red Room, which was a happening nightclub venue.
I partied in there. Yep.
Yeah. I'm sure you have. But yeah, I've worked there as an F&B manager for almost 2 years. I continued learning. I believe at the time I took a sommelier class because I always, as I go forward, I always wanted to make myself better with knowledge. And I'm like, if I work in food and beverage, I want to learn about wine, right? It will make me better, right? So I did that. I got some knowledge in wines, and at some point, a friend of mine who used to work at the St. Regis, who left the St. Regis to open a restaurant in Brickell, asked me if I would join him, and I said, why not, right? Let's try it. At that time, it was in Brickell. It was a Mediterranean French concept. I think it was way before its time.
I think so too. So that's what I want to bring up. I want to rewind a second before we get into it, because you were at some great restaurants that were, I think, were just like 2 years too early for where they were supposed to be. But you're in Shore Club, which I love that you're there, because that's one of the hot spots, right? You were there. Was Nobu still there, or had Nobu restaurant left?
Nobu was still there.
Yeah, so you still got celebrities there all the time. And I worked right next door at the Delano. So it's funny that we didn't run into each other, because that was another Morgan's Hotel Group. So we were running on the same strip at the two like fun lifestyle hotels.
Yes.
And I wish I would have spent more time there, but they sold the restaurant group to a group out of Las Vegas and it just didn't work out. But for you, was there something that really stood out that you learned from that hotel that you still think about today?
Yes. I mean, I did learn about pool and beach service, which I had no idea about. I learned about nightlife. So it was, again, a lot of learning experiences and learning curves. I mean, I take every opportunity and I learn as much as I can from every brand, every property. Yep. I was really wowed by the culture at Morgan's Hotel Group. The onboarding was something I've never seen before.
It was fun.
The way they designed the spaces, it was like, wow, incredible. But yeah, and I worked with Matthew Iacobucci, my F&B director, and Tim Nardi was the GM. Yes, great, great people to work with.
So then how come you make this change, right? Because you have a good hotel and, you know, there's different life that people don't realize. Hotel restaurant versus standalone restaurant are two different worlds.
Very different.
So how does that come that you join your friend over at Lippi?
The ownership was also part of Zuma Group. I knew I was going into a solid venue. A close friend of mine was the GM. And also it was an opening. I have never done an opening. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go through this. I wanted to experience it and see where it goes. And, you know, the offer was great. Working with good people, new concept. It was like a match, right? At the beginning. As I later learned, I really do enjoy more working in hotels than standalone restaurants. Yep. But nevertheless, openings are very tough. It was a very upscale restaurant, sharing concept. Miami back then, I don't know if it was ready for all of these concepts that we have today.
No, it was not like that. I remember the opening because that's when I had my staffing company. I was right across the street from Lippi. I remember going there to get oysters. You had an oyster special that was great. But it was beautiful, multi-million dollar restaurant. The only other thing that really existed like that was Zuma, which was on the other side of the bridge. There wasn't really anything. It was like Morton Steakhouse, and it was like, you know, Capital Grill. There wasn't anything cool like that.
Yeah.
Lippi was like the first one I remember. It was before Komodo and all these other places that are
right
everywhere now. So you're there for a little bit. You're there. You learn, but then you make a move.
Yeah, so the venue was not doing great, and they had to make some cuts, right? And I had the hard conversation.
Yep.
Then my job will probably be eliminated. And then the opportunity came to join Morimoto. It was at the Shelbourne. Also a great restaurant, great chef. Probably not the right location.
I always wondered about that space because it was like by the pool, hidden at the Shelbourne.
Yeah. Again, I think Morimoto was more of a style of a Nobu or in the same category. It was in a property where ADR was in the 200s and where your average check is, Morimoto would be in the hundreds. And again, it just didn't make sense. I understand why they made that deal now. They basically built up the entire place for them. And that's why they went in there. But again, great experiences there. I got to learn about sake. We actually had a course, sake certification course, which obviously, I went to take it and got certified. So again, it was another opening, challenging. But again, I learned a lot about Japanese cuisine, Japanese style of service, which was something I didn't know before.
So new location, new learning. And again, it didn't make it. And so no. You had to find somewhere to go.
Yeah.
And so I think this is tied together, right? Weren't Lippi and the next place tied together somehow financially?
Koya, yeah. There's similar ownership between Koya Restaurant Membership Lounge and I believe Zuma and La Petite Maison. And so the restaurant GM came for dinner at Morimoto and, you know, we engaged, we made a connection. I went to see the space and the way it was built. And that's how it all worked out, that I went to do another opening for another upscale restaurant. Yeah. Again, I learned a lot.
But listen, we all have these weird stints, right? But I think that restaurant was ahead of its time, too. It was a membership club plus restaurant, which didn't exist in Miami. Now there's a bunch of them.
Yes.
But it was beautiful. I sat there. I ate there a couple of times. What do you think about that restaurant that didn't make it? More just curious. What was it? Was it just too early again? Because this was like 2015.
And maybe it was too early. But also, the type of cuisine is nothing exciting to Miami. We have a lot of Peruvian restaurants in town, and it's not something that, I don't know, it would wow the locals to get there.
Right. But the location was beautiful. I would remember that. But you're right. I don't think the food was what it could have been to get people coming back.
I think in a different market, such as Europe, I mean, it's doing great in Europe. The one in London is a really hot spot. But Peruvian cuisine, as you know, very common in Miami. And
a lot of holes in the wall, and you got Ceviche 105. You got a bunch of places to go.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make it in the end, listeners. If you didn't know the story, you can look it up. It was short-lived. Now there's a steakhouse there, celebrity chef. But I'm excited about the next move.
It's also with the same group, the steakhouse they have there now. So at least they end up making it with a different
concept. That's good to know. You see, it's hard world out in the restaurant world. But you come back and you join one of my favorite hotels. And are you doing another opening at this time, or was it opened already when you joined?
No, it was an opening.
It was another opening. So you put yourself through the pain of multiple restaurant openings, plus an opening of what hotel? What hotel are you joining?
So obviously the Faena Hotel, which was creating a buzz around the city of Miami, Miami Beach, everywhere. There was so much buzz there. And I happened to know some of the people who were already on the team in food and beverage, who were basically like, you have to be here. This is the place to be. And I did the interviews, you know, grateful that everything went well. And I started there in September 2015, I believe, 3-4 months before the opening. And yeah, from there, it was just an incredible ride, probably the best time of my career so far. I was surrounded by amazing leaders. Some of them have been on your show and learned so much. Really love the culture. Even from the beginning, we had no building. We had nothing. We were in, you know, different properties across the city. We were at the Ice Palace. We were in the convention center. But the message, the branding was just incredible. So everybody who started there was just consumed by the buzz and by the message, by the mission of Faena. And it was something that didn't exist before. It was a luxury lifestyle hotel, which was probably the first of its kind in Miami.
For sure. I remember walking in there being like amazed during pre-construction. I'm like, wow, this place is crazy. Like they're putting gold leaf up in your Powell restaurant. Right. I'm like, this is nuts. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, what was that like opening a hotel that's now award-winning, 5-star, 5-diamond? What was it like kind of coming up and joining? Because you had been a couple restaurants. Now you're in a whole different world.
Yeah. So again, I felt much better in the hotel environment because this is where I started everything. But luxury was new to me. Forbes was new to me. All these standards were new to me. But the more I've read into this, all of the standards are nothing out of the ordinary. They all make common sense. So it wasn't difficult for me to learn. I think the difficult part was obviously going through all the trainings, not having the building. But also, I had great leadership to learn from and to look up to. But the opening was very challenging. Obviously, I was at Powell. My GM there used to be the F&B director at the Biltmore. And it seemed like everybody who came to join Faena took a step down.
Yeah, I interviewed there. Like, you need to take a step back. I was like, no, thank you. Maybe I should have gone there.
But yeah, I learned a lot from my GM.
Is that Michael Poundsbury?
Yes, Michael Poundsbury.
He's a good guy. Yes. Great Shout guy. Out to Michael Poundsbury.
Shout out to him. Patrick Fernandez was very inspirational. I was like, when I met him for the first time, I was like, wow, I want to be like him one day. Yeah. I mean, extremely professional, well-spoken, polite, always calm, no matter what's going on. And I was like, this is the leader that I want to be one day. So yeah, again, I was surrounded by great, great mentors there, which gave me the knowledge I needed to be successful. And that's what happened. After we opened Powell, eventually he moved up to the residential side of Faena, to the Faena house. So the opportunity came up to become the GM. And obviously I went for it. I don't know, you know, looking back, I don't know if I was ready, but I knew I had to project the message and make sure my team is on the same direction that Faena was, which is exceptional service, Forbes 5-star, get the 5-star every year. And this was our goal. And we were all on the same page. And it was just wonderful, wonderful.
That's amazing to see, because just in a few years of starting your career, you're now GM of one of the most popular restaurants in South Beach, right? You chased your dream. You got down to Miami. You're in the arguably the top hotel, the hottest place. Now you're GM. Did you think, all right, this is what I want to do? Or do you say, man, I really want to continue on and grow? What was your mindset at that time?
I was really like happy with where I was, but I never want to stop learning, even like I said, even today. But you know, our goal was to get 5-star for Pao as an independent restaurant. And we've came so close a few times. And I really wanted to do that. Like, this was my mission there. And I think this is what helped us become great at the same time. Because even though we never got the 5-star for Pao as an independent restaurant, this is what every single team member there wanted as well. And just as a whole, we become better and delivered. And we won a few awards, not as significant, but yeah, it was just an amazing experience.
Yeah, so you're doing a great job, because then you get up to this title that a lot of people in our industry want to get to. It was my goal for a long time. You get to become director of food and beverage at Faena. How does that come about? Is that something that you fought for? Is it a role they created for you? How does that happen?
We had quite a few, I believe, directors that were into the role and then left. But being there from the beginning, I was kind of like I knew everything about Faena, right?
Yeah. You opened it. You knew every plate, you knew every silverware, every chair, the whole thing.
I knew the F&B concepts. I was not afraid to work anywhere, whatever they needed help. And I did work anywhere and everywhere, whatever help was needed. Like, if I could have power running and go help somewhere else, I would be very open to do that. And I did. And at that time, the COO was also the acting GM. And I've gotten an incredible amount of knowledge from him. He was like my biggest mentor there for quite a while, learning numbers, budgets, forecasts.
And who was that?
Scott Garrity. Okay. Yeah. I can't thank him enough even today. But yeah, I learned so much from him. We had a lot of intense conversations, but I enjoyed those as well.
Those are the best ones.
The best. Yes. But yeah, it was funny because I don't know if you felt that way. People were not very enthusiastic about speaking up to him, but I did, and he liked it. And we had some interesting conversations, but love learning from him.
Like, I always thought, as long as it's respectful, I like to hear everyone's point of view, right? As long as it's that way. But I prefer that. Like, tell me now. I'm sure your team can come to you and say, Roddy, I don't know, maybe we should try something different.
Of course.
And I'm sure that's how you were coming up, especially if you're an F&B. It's very creative sometimes. You have different points of view and you want to try different things. Did they allow you to try things at Faena that you wanted to try?
You know, what I really enjoyed about Faena, it's you are able to be creative. Bring an idea directly to the COO and he says yes, then that's it. You do it.
Yep.
It doesn't work like this, you know, in many properties. There's layers of communications and approvals that you need to get. But this was another positive and benefit that we had at Faena, because we decided what goes on locally. And we did open the concept of the omakase. We created the menu from scratch, worked with the chefs, pricing, beverage, and we made it happen. So this was pretty cool as well.
So El Secreto, you get El Secreto open. I've eaten there. Again, listeners, you can watch the video I did there. Chef Cornell was nice enough to get us in there to film a video, which was a lot of fun. So you're there. You're at the top of the game in Faena. You're not the GM, but you have the COO right there. You have the ear. You're director of food and beverage. And you make an interesting move, right, to another place that has a great brand name. How does that come up?
Yeah, so Faena, it was once I got to the F&B director, it was harder to grow further because, again, it's a property in Miami. There's another one in Buenos Aires, and that's it. And learning the room side of things while being a director of F&B was very challenging. I mean, not going to say it's impossible, but it was very hard for me to allow time for myself to start learning new things on the other side. Right. And I just wanted to continue growing. And I spoke with Scott and I said, look, I'm going to look around and, you know, if something comes up. And he encouraged me. He's like, if you stay in the same place for so many years, there's only so much you can learn. Yep. And he's like, I recommend it. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you go. You're going to learn new things just by being in another building. So, you know, that was good to hear as well. So I was in touch with a recruiter from Soho House, and, you know, they had a position of AGM. I made connections with the general manager, and it worked out.
Amazing. So then you make this move. You're at Soho, which to me, and still to a lot of people, right, is kind of like this magical world. They're not sure if they can get into. There's always celebrities there, hot spots. Do I have to be a member? Do I not have to be a member?
Yeah.
What was that like for you now, kind of going at a higher role? It's a smaller hotel, right? 50 yeah. Really a scene, membership, restaurants, pool, beach, demanding people.
Yeah.
You know, the footprint isn't the biggest footprint, so you have to make a lot work with a smaller place.
Yes. Yes.
What was it like for you getting into there?
Very interesting and challenging. You know, I was in luxury for 7 years. Yes, we have a part of lifestyle, but still a luxury. And then to make the change to a private membership club, very challenging. But I started and I, you know, spoke with my GM and I said, look, I want to work in every single department and I want to see how everything operates. So that's what I did. I try to understand how the front desk operates, how membership operates, how all the departments work, and try to be patient, learn as much as I can, and, you know, also follow his lead, see how he operates, and, you know, learn from him, fit in with the team, understand the brand, understand the concept. But yeah, it was not very easy. It was difficult, but worth it.
If you were giving advice, I've been in this, but at a lower level where I leave like an ultra luxury hotel to go to a nice hotel and you catch yourself, like, oh, we used to do it like this over here. Like, why don't we do that here? Did you ever catch yourself saying that? Or did you know going in that wasn't going to be the mindset?
No, honestly, you have to go anywhere with an open mind and start and learn everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. And if you see that there are changes you can make to benefit the operation, then you can do that later. But to go in and say, we did this like that, this way, that way. No, first you have to understand the brand, understand the concept, understand how it operates, learn everything there is, and then try to improve it step by step.
So you're there, you're working there as the AGM, you're learning this place, and then you make a move up. So you're doing a good job. What is it that you think made you get to this role, right? Because I'm sure like everyone in hotels, from the day you were at the staffing company, to that AGM, you were looking to become a general manager. How did that happen?
You have to have a lot of patience. I think that's a quality that everybody oversees, but you have to be positive. You have to be open-minded and just continue learning. Yeah, if you have those qualities, I think you can go far in hospitality. I know it's a very fast-paced industry, but patience is very important. So my general manager at the time was actually an area general manager. He was overseeing the development of the new house that's soon to open and also another house in the Caribbean, which is Canaan, as well as the beach house. And he was also always assisting any other houses that may need a help. So he was traveling a lot. But again, he was an incredible mentor that I learned a lot from. And what I took from him is his positivity, regardless of anything that's going on. He always had a positive mindset and the team just fed into it. So
I love it. I think that's great advice for people to hear. So now that you're general manager, and do you remember the first day kind of sitting in that chair? Did you feel different that day? Did you take in a moment to like soak it in? Like, wow, I'm general manager of the Soho House here in Miami Beach. Or was it like another day for you?
No, I definitely took the time to soak it in. And I don't think anybody's ready for their first general manager role.
Yep.
Or maybe they are, but
I think most people are, like you said, it's kind of like the first time you went into a restaurant as a GM, like, all right, I'm going to take it and you learn it, right? So I think it's the same thing.
Sometimes, like, I still couldn't believe it. Well, this is my title now. But yeah, definitely took time to soak it in. Yeah.
I love it. And so you're there, you're at Soho House now. You know, we see a lot, like I think it was on the news recently, membership clubs are exploding everywhere. and you have one of the premier ones in the country, if not on the planet, that seems like everybody wants to be at. How do you handle that and really kind of like motivate your team to keep up the standards in a place that's so busy?
Yeah, by being positive, being consistent with the message. We cannot control things that we cannot control. So let's focus on everything we can control and make it better. And, you know, project the same message in the most difficult times consistently every day and try to get the best out of everyone.
I love that. And so, look, you spent a lot of time with me. I know how busy you are, but I've got one last question for you, Roddy. So if young Roddy was leaving Bulgaria, was arriving here in South Beach for the first time and was at the doors of Soho House, what advice are you giving to him if he was starting his career today?
Definitely never give up. Anything is possible. And, you know, everybody comes to this amazing country to live the American dream, and it's still alive even today. So never give up. Keep going. Keep working towards your dream, and it will happen.
Gosh, I love that. I think it's just great advice for anybody listening, especially if you're starting out. I love watching your journey because it shows anything can happen. Like you said, if you're in a staffing company right now, you're working as a banquet server, who knows? In 12, 14 years, you could be a GM of your own hotel as well if you really put in the work.
Absolutely. So,
Roddy, if somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do it? Is it just showing up at Soho House and asking for you, or are they going to get kicked out? How can someone connect with you?
Through LinkedIn be the best way. But yeah, most of the time at Soho House. So.
Yeah. Well, listeners, take the time. If you're not driving, take a moment to pause. Look up the beautiful Soho House in Miami Beach. It is a beautiful place to be. And if you have the chance to visit, make sure to do that. Roddy, thank you so much for joining us. I'm very grateful for you spending this time with us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea. To enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.